This is the World War II Radio Podcast.
A date which will live in infamy.
This is London.
We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Go ahead, Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome to the World War II Radio Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to present the original radio broadcast from 80 years ago during the days of the war, with the occasional more recent radio program about the war. Today, we have the March 20th, 1944 issue of the Crisco radio newspaper. Hosted by Bernadine Flynn and Durward Kirby, these daily news updates were broadcast over CBS and sponsored by Crisco. World War II Radio Podcast is a Brick Pickle Media production. If you like the show, please leave feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Be sure to visit our website at brickpicklemedia.com/podcast, where you can find links to past episodes and other information. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/WW2Radio. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Crisco's radio newspaper with Bernadine Flynn. Brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. Now, Bernadine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward. Hello, friends. In just a moment, Durward Kirby will bring us the latest world news. But first, as you may know, there are just 19 minutes of winter left. Yes, spring, according to the weatherman, will arrive officially at 12:49 this afternoon, Central War Time. It's one day earlier than usual because of leap year. But if you look out of your windows, you probably won't believe that spring is anywhere around. When I left my house this morning to come down to the studio, the thermometer outside said 25 degrees. And all along the East Coast and throughout most of the Midwest, Old Man Winter has spent his last 24 hours preparing a welcome mat of snow to greet spring. The people in the South aren't having any snow, but they are shivering in cold rains and biting north winds. And to top everything, the weatherman in Indianapolis almost couldn't make a forecast this morning. It was so cold that the door to his rooftop instruments was frozen shut. And now, Durward, what's the latest news?
Well, Bern, the big news of the day comes from Russia. Premier Stalin has just announced the capture of an important German base on the Dnieper River. It's the town of Mogilev-Podolsk. And only a few hours earlier, the Germans announced that their forces had evacuated Vinnytsia. That was one of their last big defense strongholds in the northwest Ukraine. The Berlin communique said Vinnytsia was evacuated according to plan after destruction of war installations. And the German people at home must be saying to themselves, where have I heard that phrase before? To the west, the Allied air war is hitting Germany and her occupied countries new blows. American bombers thundered out over the continent soon after dawn this morning with new loads of bombs for Hitler's factories. The heavy, four-engined bombers struck at targets in southwest Germany, while hundreds of lighter planes blasted objectives in France. On the Italian battlefronts, the Germans are still offering stiff resistance. They have reinforced their positions in the town of Cassino and regained a hill to the west. Fierce fighting continues. CBS correspondent Winston Burdett summed up the bitterness of the Cassino fighting in a broadcast from Algiers this morning. He said, German machine gunners are still shooting it out from behind the shattered walls of a Roman amphitheater, from a ducal palace on the south side of Highway 6, from the rubble of a building which was once Cassino's Continental Hotel and which is now a hideout for German tanks. Across the Mediterranean from Italy, Pierre Pouchot, the former Vichy cabinet minister, was executed on a North African rifle range this morning. He was convicted of treason to France by a special military court last week. He died courageously. His last request was that he be allowed to give the orders to the firing squad himself. And he did. A very special marriage took place in London this morning. Yugoslavia's young King Peter took Princess Alexandra of Greece as his bride. And from somewhere else in Britain, there comes the story of a horse-drawn harvest binder. In 1919, it was sold to a farmer for $200. 12 years ago, it was sold again, this time for $12. The other day, the same binder, now 25 years old, was auctioned off for $320, or $120 more than it had brought when it was brand new. There's no price control in England on old farm machinery. In the Far East, Chinese and American forces have smashed Japanese resistance throughout the Hukong Valley of northern Burma. An official Chinese communique says that in the four-month campaign, 1,800 square miles of territory were recaptured and 4,000 enemy troops were killed. But now the Japanese, stung by this loss, are striking back in the war's first major drive on India. The enemy's offensive apparently is aimed at outflanking the Chinese-American forces and moving against the capital of the Indian state of Manipur. In the South Pacific, American troops have virtually completed their occupation of the strategic Admiralty Islands, giving us new bases for further blows against the Japs in the south and central sectors of the Pacific. And that's the top of today's World News. Now, Bernardine, have you something from the Crisco kitchen for our listeners?
You know, a lot of women are saying that they don't know how they'd manage these days if they hadn't discovered Crisco's new pastry method.
Well, a plain meal just automatically becomes a party meal when you serve a tender, flaky pie for dessert.
There's a hitch, though, in getting that pie crust tender and flaky. And that's where Crisco's pastry method comes in. With Crisco and the pastry method, every single time you make a pie, you can count on perfect results. A pie crust that's so golden brown, so tender and flaky that, well, it makes you hungry just to look at it. The directions are right on the Crisco label, you know. And honestly, it's such a weight off your mind not to worry whether this will be one of the days when your pastry comes out right or if it's going to be tough and soggy. With Crisco and the pastry method, you can count on success every time. Why, take the chocolate chiffon pie we had for dinner the other night.
That's one of my favorites.
Well, you should have seen my family pitch in. There wasn't even a crumb of pie crust left on their plate. Which reminds me, do you know that made with pure all-vegetable Crisco, you can count on pie crust being digestible?
You betcha. It sets right with the whole family. So why don't you see what a grand pie maker you are? Try Crisco and the Crisco pastry method today. Well, Vern, what's next?
It's a war story, Durward. One which I think ranks among the top of all the unusual and dramatic adventure stories that have come out of the war. It happened last October on a gloomy, windy night in the North Atlantic. A group of Navy planes were just coming back to their carrier from a patrol over the sea. The last two planes in the air were flown by Lieutenant Roger Coon of Plymouth, Indiana, and Lieutenant Harry Fryatt of Waukesha, Wisconsin. It wasn't so unusual that these two particular men happened to be flying the last planes in the air, for they had been friends and buddies ever since they were first assigned to this carrier. They shared the same room, they flew together on duty, and spent most of their spare time together. That night, as they approached the carrier, signal lights from the deck blinked out a message for them to come in. Lieutenant Coon pointed the nose of his plane downward and in a moment had landed safely. But Lieutenant Fryatt had a problem. His plane had taken a 40-millimeter shell through the wing while fighting a surface U-boat, and the landing gear and hydraulic system were damaged. When he tried to lower his plane's wheels for the landing, only one came down, and then it wouldn't go back up. Well, the sea down below was pretty rough, and there was only a slim chance that the flyer could be rescued if he should land his crippled plane in the water. There was a better chance that he could make a successful crash landing on the deck of the carrier. So the order went out over the ship's public address system, clear the deck for a crash landing, and men scurried to make ready. Lieutenant Coon's plane, which had just landed, was parked near the bow, beyond the barriers that helped to stop incoming planes. Lieutenant Kuhn ran below to his room, his heart heavy over the plight of his friend. "I didn't want to see him come in," he said later. "I felt that his chances of staying on deck were about 1 in 100. When I was in the room, I noticed Fryatt's flashlight on his desk, and I thought of the dark water outside. Then I looked up at his bunk and decided right then that it wouldn't be empty that night if I could help it. So I grabbed the flashlight, ran up to the edge of the flight deck just ahead of my parked plane, and waited. In a moment, everything was ready, and Lieutenant Fryatt was given an order to come in. He nosed down through the darkened sky and eased in toward the restless carrier. He had misjudged the distance and overshot. Up he went again to try once more. Several times he roared his crippled plane over the carrier before finally dropping in for the landing. But he was too high when he cut the throttle, and he missed all the stops and barriers on the ship's deck. His wingtip struck the carrier's island, knocking off part of the wing. Then his plane caromed across the deck, crashing into Lieutenant Kuhn's plane, and stopped dead. It was a successful landing for Lieutenant Fryatt. He and his gunner and his radio man crawled out of the plane unhurt. But in the meantime, Lieutenant Kuhn's plane, catapulted forward by the impact of the crash, had leaped straight ahead. And Kuhn himself, standing nearby, was knocked 30 feet and over the edge of the flight deck onto the forecastle rail. As he hung there momentarily, he saw his heavy plane following him down, coming straight over the edge toward him. Without a second's hesitation, Lieutenant Kuhn pushed over the rail and went tumbling more than 40 feet down into the black and stormy water of the Atlantic. The plane came right behind him and hit the waves only a few inches away. When the flyer came up to the surface, he was gasping for breath as the big waves kept splashing over his head. He found a couple of life jackets floating nearby, and as he reached for those, he discovered that he was still holding his buddy's flashlight in his hand. He pushed the button, and a beam of light split the inky blackness of the night. A destroyer was ordered to pick him up out of the sea, and it edged through the water very cautiously so as not to run him down. Finally, someone on the destroyer threw him a line. But no sooner had the flyer grabbed the line than the destroyer started cutting through the water at full speed. And, as Lieutenant Kuhn describes it, there I was skipping across the surface of the water like an Hawaiian on an aquaplane. Why, I'm not sure, but someone said later that there was a submarine nearby and it had thrown a torpedo at us. Finally, he goes on, they slowed down, and I was pulled aboard like a bass on a hook. But this isn't quite the end of the story, for Lieutenant Kuhn was sent to a naval hospital to recover from his ordeal. And when he came out, he was married to Miss Mary Lickenwalner, a pretty Navy nurse who had helped to nurse him back to health.
Boy, what a story that is, Vern. His grandchildren will never believe all those things could possibly have happened to their grandpop.
I think you're right there, Durward. And now what's the home front picture today?
An official of the Federal Reserve Board says that government restrictions on installment buying will continue as long as they are needed to prevent inflation. And that probably will be well into the post-war period, or in other words, until there are enough civilian goods to match the supply of money available.
That sounds reasonable, Durward.
Yes. And incidentally, Byrne, government agents today started interviewing families in 68 areas throughout the country in an effort to see what civilian goods are needed the most. And the results will be announced about May 1st. On the food front, the government says that we will have enough food this year to meet our essential military and civilian requirements. But Food Administrator Jones says we cannot be expected to supply most of the food needed to feed the world after the war. He says the United States is not the food basket of the world. By the way, ladies, here is this week's ration reminder. For processed foods, green stamps K, L, and M expire tonight. But blue stamps A, B, C, D, and E, all number 8, in Ration Book 4, may be used through May 20th. For meats, fats, and so forth, brown stamps Y and Z expire tonight, and red stamps A, B, C, D, E, and F, all number 8, in Book 4, are valid through May 20th. Now, Bernardine?
You know, last night I had some unexpected company drop in. And did I bless my jar of Crisco? Even with a few leftovers, you can turn out a meal you're really proud to serve.
Well, what'd you whip up, Fern?
Well, I turned the tag end of a roast into a meat hash that was simply delicious. Crisco is just grand for hashes, you know. They turn out so crusty and brown. Then I took some leftover vegetables, chopped them, dropped them into a fritter batter, and made vegetable fritters. My, they were good. Not a bit greasy, just light and crispy.
Oh, Crisco has a special knack for fried foods, all right. It turns them out so they tickle anybody's appetite. And here is the important thing. With Crisco, you can count on everything you fry being digestible. Or say even the youngsters can pitch into Crisco fried foods. Now don't forget that pure all-vegetable Crisco is digestible itself, and it's the finest quality shortening you can use. Why, sure, with Crisco, everything you cook tastes better, and it's digestible. Now, Vern, what's your last story?
It's about Corporal Ed Rocklin, who is a military policeman. He's stationed at Fort Sheridan, and the other Saturday he went to Chicago to spend the evening. He was 24 hours late getting back to camp, and the only reason he wasn't later was because he finally found a locksmith to set him free. As the corporal explained to his commander, "You see, sir, I put my handcuffs on to show my girl how they worked, and I couldn't get them off."
Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Crisco's Radio Newspaper.
Durward Kirby will bring you the latest world news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Crisco. It's digestible.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast. We hope these old-time radio programs entertain and help you learn more about what Americans experienced during the war 80 years ago. Be sure to visit brickpicklemedia.com/podcast for past episodes and more information